I am the architect. I created the Matrix.
Shall we play a game?
Lawrence O'Donnell, the highly paid assassin on MSNBC, is at it again. And I'm going to play for you a clip from his TV show or radio show this morning. This person is articulate. He is persuasive. Take a listen.
Well, we have new reporting from the New York Times today that gives us new, dramatic details about President Trump's unpresidential, very unpresidential reaction to the Justice Department's appointment of a special prosecutor to investigate Donald Trump and his family and his campaign associates. The short version of it is that an out-of-control, livid president called the attorney general sitting there in the Oval Office with him an idiot and demanded his resignation on the spot. And the attorney general called an idiot, shook with emotion, and then, later that day, handed over his written resignation. Here's how it played out. Fade in on interior Oval Office day, May 17th, 2017. In the room, the president, the vice president, the attorney general, White House counsel Don McGahn, and other aides not named in the New York Times reporting today, which puts them high on the list of suspects as sources for the New York Times article. The New York Times credits their inside information on this story to current and former administration officials.
O'Donnell is a persuasive expert. Listen to what he says, and if you need to, listen again to the front part of this podcast when he talks about fading in and unnamed suspects. And then he uses the unnamed suspects as evidence that something happened, even though the suspects were unnamed. And when he says, fade in to the White House, you see, a good persuasive person, a person knows how to do it, gives you just enough information, just enough facts that allow you to believe everything else. For example, when he says, picture the Oval Office, May 17th, 2017. See, that's more or less factual information that makes you think that whatever he's saying actually happened. Yet all he's really doing is inferring information from this New York Times article. It's amazing. I mean, I have to admit it. The guy is phenomenal. He is persuasive. He could sell ice to Eskimos. He could convince them that they need ice to stay warm. He is articulate. He is good looking. He has everything that a dangerous person has. You know, the people who take advantage of other people, people that are called con artists or sham artists, they fit a certain mold. They're persuasive. They're confident. They're articulate. And we buy into what they say. O'Donnell is a dangerous assassin. And he has followers. He has followers on MSNBC. And he has sponsors that are paying him to point his bullets at Trump. The most played podcast episode I have is one of the original O'Donnell episodes I recorded. You might take a look at it. It's in the archives somewhere. I think it's titled O'Donnell and MSNBC, The Trump Assassins. You might find that. And O'Donnell will go on and assassinate Trump And I have to say that for a while, I thought maybe he inadvertently or accidentally took things out of context when he talked. That he just did this because he was sloppy in referring to what Trump said from time to time. Now I realize that's not the truth. I heard him yesterday, and he clearly said something that was so obviously out of context that even I was amazed. So I'm convinced now that he does it deliberately. He's on a mission. He is a disciple. He's an apostle. He is on a mission to crucify Donald Trump. No metaphor intended. But that's his mission. And I think he feels self-righteous about it. I'm sure he gets around with his sponsors and the people that feed him information. And they talk about how to compose material, take materials out of context to assassinate Trump. Because I think he feels that's his job. His job is not to report the news objectively. His job is to report the news that assassinates Trump. And they even know how to do the headlines. The headlines on O'Donnell's broadcast this morning was breaking news, New York Times. Trump called Sessions idiot, demanded his resignation. In other words, these people are experts at using visual communications to support verbal communications to make their point. And they start referring this now to an exhibit. This is a great term because in the legal world, exhibits are things that are used to prove a point. I write lots of reports. When I write a report, I say, see Exhibit A for further information. So now they're starting to call this New York Times article and this alleged session with Sessions an exhibit, as if that will become an exhibit in the Mueller report. Okay, I'm going to say it one more time. The Mueller report will uncover nothing. It will take another 6 months, maybe a year. But I've said it many times, and the report is going to end with, gee, there is a lot of circumstantial evidence. There is this, there is that. We talked to all the different people, but there is not enough information to bring a criminal prosecution against anyone. That's what's going to happen. In other words, nothing will happen. But the Democrats will say that's a clear victory. Now, let me get on the Democrats again. And let me review. There was FEMA. Yes, millions of people down in Texas had a problem. They needed money. FEMA needed money to rebuild the infrastructure. They needed several billion dollars. And the bill was put forward to give FEMA another $7.8 billion for infrastructure improvement, roads, highways, schools, etc. And FEMA needed the money. Everyone knew they needed the money. So why didn't all the Republicans and all the Democrats simply vote for it? Well, as I've said before, the Dems didn't. They said to Trump, we won't vote for it. We won't send money to FEMA. We won't send money to the people in Texas unless you'll agree to give us something. They held the Texas people hostage until they got something. And Trump said, screw it. Okay, you'll get an extra 90 days on the debt ceiling. That's over. And he got his $7.8 billion vote. And the Republicans were miffed. I don't get it. Why wasn't both parties in favor of it? Trump was right. Do whatever it takes. Give the people in Texas their $7.8 billion through FEMA. And now what do we have? We have it again. DACA. The Republicans and the Democrats, they're in favor of DACA. They want to codify the original executive order, the one that Trump overturned, saying, if you want DACA to be in place, codify it, make it a law. You would think all the Republicans and all the Democrats would jump forward, go to their seats in Congress, in the Senate, and vote in favor of it because they all want it, they say. Who wants to send 800,000 people back to their parent country? Let's do something for the DACA people. But wait a minute. What are the Democrats doing? They're saying, yeah, we're in favor of DACA, Mr. Trump, but we won't vote for it unless you give us something. Why isn't that the story? Why isn't the story why the Democrats need something to vote money for FEMA? Why the Democrats need something to support DACA? Aren't those things American enough and vital enough that Republicans and Democrats alone should support them because they're right, because they're the right things to do? But no, the Democrats want something for it. Trump says, okay, what do you want? I'll give it to you. And the Republicans get miffed. So what? Trump knows DACA is important. Even though he overturned the executive order that Obama put together, he wants it codified. He's not stupid. He doesn't want to send 800,000 people here that were here not because of their fault. He doesn't want to do that. He just says, codify it. Y'all want it? Make it a law. See, he's the president. He doesn't make the laws. Congress does. So it goes to Congress, and what do they say? The Democrats, well, gee, we'll vote for DACA, but we want something for it. What can we get, another 90 days on the ceiling on the debt? Or can you agree to not build a wall? Or la-di-da. Why do the Democrats need anything if they're in favor of DACA? Why doesn't some Democrat get up in front of the media and say, I don't want anything for DACA. I'm in favor of it. I'm going to vote for it. Why doesn't a Democrat say, I am in favor of helping the people in Texas. I am going to vote for FEMA money because it's the right thing to do. But no one said that. No one said it was the right thing to do. They just said, gee, give us something for it. And the Republicans got mad because Trump gave them something for it. Well, he wouldn't have to do it. The Republicans would all get together and vote for the things that are correct. Watch, because every time something comes up now, whether it's FEMA or DACA or something else, Trump will go to the Democrats and say, what do you want? And why shouldn't he do that? He knows FEMA money, DACA money, and other things are the right thing to do. So he gives up the debt ceiling for another 60 days or 90 days. What difference does it make? We raise it every time it comes up anyway. It's only a few Republicans who mystically believe that the debt ceiling is a some sort of a bargaining chip. Well, it must be. The Democrats think it's important, but I think Trump says that's ridiculous. If we need more money and it's limited by the debt ceiling, what are we going to do? We're going to raise the debt ceiling. We've been doing it for, I don't know, 50 years or so. I don't know exactly, but every time I've heard it come up, we eventually raise it. Okay, what else is going on that has some interest? A lot of things, I think. I think a lot of things are happening right now. The Washington Post had kind of an interesting article, and I'll see if I can find it while we're together this morning here. Maybe I can. Maybe I can find it. Okay, who is this person, Chelsea Manning? Who is she? And why is she so important? Well, I don't know even why she's so important, but apparently Harvard offered Chelsea Manning a Harvard fellowship, something they give out to important people or people in the news so that the Harvard graduates, or Harvard, not the graduates, but the Harvard students can hobnob and talk to important newsworthy people. Clearly, she's newsworthy. So they offered her a visiting fellowship. I don't know, it probably pays $400,000 or $500,000 a year to walk around campus and talk to students and give a few speeches. It's an honor in my mind to be given a Harvard School of Government Fellowship. And other people agreed with me. So what happened? But there was some pushback. And people, important people, wrote letters to Harvard saying, hey, we don't think that's right. You're giving honor to a person who was a convicted felon. She was convicted of giving thousands of confidential documents into the public sector. She gave them to this fellow named Assuage. So somebody named Morrell resigned, a national security person, and Pompeo wrote him a letter saying, hey, look, I think this is ridiculous. Now, Manning is 29 years old, is transgender. As an Army private first class named Bradley Manning, she was convicted of espionage and sentenced to 35 years in prison for providing thousands of classified documents to WikiLeaks, which Pompeo and Morrell characterized as an adversarial foreign intelligence service. Well, some people consider that WikiLeaks founder is some sort of a champion for transparency. But anyway, she was convicted. And of course, what did Obama do? He, of course, pardoned her. He commuted her prison sentence before leaving office. She's released. Harvard goes, offers her a fellowship. And interestingly enough, by the way, Manning was in prison at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, not far from where this podcast is coming from. So Kansas is vitally involved in this critical issue. Of course, Manning now has been a prominent voice for LGBT rights and routinely writes about social and technological and economic ramifications of artificial intelligence. I don't know how those two are connected, but maybe they are. Anyway, I think Harvard has rescinded her fellowship, but still said she could come and hang out on the campus and talk to students and give a few talks. I call this Gladwell-ish or Gladwell-esque. The outliers, the further you are from the center, the more publicity you get. She's far from the center, that's for sure. So that's the Chelsea Manning, formerly Bradley Manning issue. And it's not going away, because in Gladwell-esque fashion, the outliers get the oil. Or as they used to say, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And if you're not squeaking, you're not going to be greased. It's pretty true in almost everything I see, including corporations. If you sit back and do nothing, you will get no publicity. And apparently, there's no such thing as bad publicity. And Manning, okay, what's going to happen now? She's going to get another book, or a first book. She'll get a book. Because that's what happens. In Gladwell-esque fashion, the farther you are to the left, or the farther you are to the right, you get the ability to write books. Book contracts. Publishers, by the way, now have a term called the social media number. And they would like to publish books for people that have a high social media number. I think they call it the social media score. And what it means, for example, if you were to Google Chelsea Manning, which I haven't done, by the way, but you would probably get thousands and thousands of hits. If you Google Robert Sherwood, you won't. So Chelsea Manning, before this is all over, formerly Bradley Manning, will get a book contract, will have a high social media score, and she'll walk away a wealthy person. That's all I have to say on that. The ESPN apology, Well, you know, the ESPN person called Trump a white supremacist and a bigot. And they found a way to keep her on staff by taking an interesting position. And their position was that under the First Amendment rights, she has a right to say what she believes. She doesn't have a right to say it represents anything ESPN believes, even though she works for ESPN, and it's hard to differentiate what she thinks herself and what she thinks for ESPN. But because of this parsing of this phrase, because of the able to distinguish between a First Amendment right for her and whether or not what she says represents ESPN, they were able to say she has a right to say what she wants, but she doesn't have a right to say that it represents ESPN. And because she didn't say it represented ESPN, A, she gets to keep her job, and she gets now to tweak as often as she wants that Trump is a white supremacist and a bigot. Very interesting parsing of terms there. And I think it's paved the way for more people that are on national television, national radio, or that are in the public eye to tweet negative things about Trump, but take the position that they weren't representing the media outlet that they work for. But wait a minute, what's the problem there? The problem there is the only reason they get the attention anyway to what they say is because they're an employee of ESPN and they're on TV. So the very platform that they use to give their personal opinion, that platform was created by their employer. But their employer, not wanting to fire this particular person, said, hey, whatever she said was okay with us, or not okay with us, but it wasn't indicative of her ESPN job. Do you see the point there? If I'm a major radio or TV talk show host, if I handle NFL football games or soccer games, and I get known nationally because of that platform, now that I can take my name recognition over to another theoretical media channel, such as Twitter, and Twitter that Trump's a bigot and doesn't represent who I work for, but it does represent my First Amendment right to call Trump a bigot because I believe he is a bigot. Now, you need to think about that parsing because you're going to see this more and more as people use their personality platforms, no, not personality platform, but a platform that they developed because of what they did. Well, let me give you a quick example. Steve Curry is well known nationally. He plays for the NBA, you know, he's a basketball player, right? Obviously, you know who he is. But he could go now and tweet anything he wants and say it doesn't represent the NBA, it represents his personal opinion. Even though the platform that gave him notoriety was the NBA. But the NBA has to let him do that because First Amendment rights to him. This is something that's just happened. This is the most interesting parsing I have ever heard of. Well, no, maybe not ever heard of, but certainly distinctive. A lot of people have been fired in the last 4 or 5 years because of the inability to make this distinction. And some lawyer who works for ESPN came up with this really neat distinction. He probably went into a meeting and said, hey, look, guys, I've got this great thing. We don't have to fire this person. We can simply differentiate her personal opinion covered by the First Amendment rights and an opinion supported by ESPN. As long as she doesn't say it's representative of ESPN, she can use her well-known notoriety that she achieved through her ESPN job to tweet Trump's a bigot, Trump's a white supremacist, and anything else she wants to tweet. There's no limit to how negative she can become in tweeting, or Steve Curry, or anybody else. I'm not saying Steve Curry is doing it. I'm just saying it's an example of somebody who has a national platform that can now tweet all the negative things that he wants or she wants, as long as it doesn't indicate that it's representative of their employer. I can think of many examples of this that are hypothetical issues for me. It's somebody, let's say somebody works for IBM, and they become nationally known as CEO of IBM or vice president of IBM, and they don't like Trump or somebody else, so they go over and they tweet that Trump's a bigot. IBM can't fire him, because now we have precedent. He tweeted his personal opinion, protected by the First Amendment rights. Or what if he tweets, hey, I don't think computers are a good thing to buy. That's a personal opinion. That's okay, even though it works for IBM, because it's a personal opinion about computers. Doesn't affect his job at IBM. Maybe that's a stretch, but think about it. Anytime you can have a personal opinion that you can launch from a platform that you created or received or developed by your job, and you can say whatever you want individually, as long as you don't represent it as the opinion of your employer or the person who created your platform, then it's okay. I'm telling you, this is the cleverest differentiation in a decade. It's going to happen all the time now, and people now know how to do it. They've been taught by the ESPN controversy. And that's all for today on September 15th, 2017. I hope you found that information interesting. Go back and listen to some other podcasts on O'Donnell. I think you'll find those things interesting. If you have some comments, send it in to webtalkwithbob@gmail.com. I'm ready to comment. And by the way, next week, I've got our Kansas Democrat back on. I've got an opinionated Republican coming on, I think, next week also. And I apologize to all of you who had to listen to O'Donnell's tirade or gospel this morning. If the guy was a preacher, he'd have a community of hundreds of thousands of people and be making even more millions than he is now. He is persuasive. He is dangerous, in my opinion. He is dangerous to the American people. That's all for now.